You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Hi, Jim. Good to be with you and with our audience out there.
Bob, I have a question for you. Do you think we're going to see currencies around the world, digital-based currencies, that will use gold to help prop up part of that currency?
Well, I sort of see that go by every once in a while, and I think it's sort of fanciful at the moment. What the world needs is a senior currency, and markets decide which is going to be the senior currency, and the financial center, it's now New York with the dollar as the senior currency. Prior to that, way back, it was London was the financial center, and the pound was the senior currency. And if you want to really go back to the 1500s, it was Antwerp was the financial and commercial center, and it was the guilder. So the market forces determine that. And so any plans to kind of rig up something such as what you were describing is, I think, fanciful is a good word for it.
I know the BRICS countries keep talking about bringing in the unit, which would be a digital currency, 40% backed by gold, and then I guess like your regular fiat currency based on the value and economic productivity of your country. Right now, it's estimated if the unit was ever brought in, it would be worth about $20 U.S. But every year, they say, going into their meeting, we're going to bring in the unit. And then after they meet up in the spring, nothing happens. Do you think the unit will ever happen?
No. The world will have a reserve currency, and the international global financial markets and commercial markets will decide which is the senior currency. So I have no concerns about any contrived idea, such as these BRICS things, displacing the U.S. dollar. It just ain't going to happen.
Now, taking a look at some of the headlines that caught your eye from Road and Track, a shipping company is refusing to transport EVs and PHEVs due to the risk of fire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think it was a huge shipping company, Meister. And yeah, they're seeing that electronic vehicles with these lithium batteries, they're dangerous. They blow up in an instant without warning. So this is getting practical.
Yeah. Now, I've been looking at statistics. EVs don't catch fire more often than our ICE vehicles. The problem is with lithium. Once it's on fire, it's nearly impossible to put out instantly. You know, foam, water. Right now, the protocol for putting out an EV fire is to take the vehicle, put it in a dumpster, and then just keep loading water on it for the next 3 days.
Yeah, I saw something about that. No, the electric vehicles is very impractical. And like, for example, in Canada, by a certain year, there's no ordinary cars allowed. Well, they haven't looked at the demand for electricity should everybody end up driving electric cars. They would have to build, I figure it was 8 or 9 nuclear plants just to generate the extra electricity that would be used on these damn full vehicles. So,
better start building those plants right now because it's only 10 years away, and that's probably the amount of time it takes. But what about the environmental studies, and will the residents want, an atomic power plant next to them?
Think of how much money it's going to take to build all those plants, plus the cost of the cars, and even just putting together the rare earths is an insult to certain parts of the country and wherever they're mining that stuff. It's just, it is a disaster. But fortunately, with this headline, people are starting to get practical about it.
Well, I'm just doing the smart thing here. How much to build an atomic power plant? Yeah, well, of course, it doesn't want to give me an answer.
No, but also...
But no doubt, billions of dollars.
With the process, it would take 15 years before you got the approval.
$16 billion.
Okay.
You know, your average startup cost for an atomic power plant. Now, they keep talking about these micro atomic power plants the size of a phone booth. A phone booth, by the way, for our younger listeners, is a small structure that used to house a telephone that had a rotary dial sometimes or push buttons for you, and you would put coins. Those are little discs of metal that represent a value of money. And Bob, I'm not exaggerating. I bought a small cell phone to travel with, and I paid cash, and the cashier did not know how to make change.
Right.
The young woman was baffled.
Yeah.
So that's why I was describing what those particular things are.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything like that put into production.
Nope.
Yeah. And something that's being ignored in British Columbia, which has great tidal surges, is tidal power. There's a company in Richmond, British Columbia, that makes barges that can produce enough power for 3,000 to 5,000 homes just from the force of the tides turning a big water turbine that doesn't disturb wildlife. Again, I don't see anything, locally where we live that's going to take advantage of all these tides we have that squirt between the islands.
Well, I've read about these plans for decades.
Yeah.
Somebody's always going to harness the tides. And in the Bay of Fundy or something like that, they get about an 18-foot tide.
The biggest in the world.
People have been trying to do something about that. But when it comes to power, hydroelectric is very good. And nuclear modular plants are very good as well.
Now, the problem with hydro in British Columbia is the summers are getting hotter and drier, so there's less rain and less snow. So there's concerns in the future there won't be enough water to power these hydro dams.
Well, I would question the notion that we're going to run out of snow and rain in the mountains on the West Coast. No. That you know that I don't endorse the global warming thesis, and that it's going to be a disaster throughout the last billion years. Every warming trend has been very favorable to life, and all you have to do is look at the ice ages to understand how it helps life. I mean, when Vancouver. Well, let's say Chicago. When the ice was a mile deep at Chicago, what was life like under the ice? A few sort of bacteria and
Well, Bob, that's where all the cool people hung out.
I guess so. Yeah.
We have a headline here from Zero Hedge: earnings on fire, breath surges, tech leads, and the U.S. stands alone.
Very exciting. But what I liked is that at the moment, the U.S. stands alone. So the big action is, the hottest action is in the U.S. And we're not certain how long that'll last.
From Zero Hedge, how will we know if the data is being manipulated?
Yeah, You're going to be a very good analyst to get into that stuff and figure out how much of it is being manipulated. But my suspicion is that a whole lot of government data is being manipulated to make a point, get an issue across, that sort of stuff.
Well, the inflation numbers, for example, governments got together back in the early 90s after seeing rampant inflation in the 70s and 80s. We're just going to exclude certain items like fuel and housing from inflation statistics.
Yeah, they did do that, Jim.
They keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah, then, trying to make the numbers as best possible.
and when I hear, from the government, the inflation last month was 2.3%. Meanwhile, my wife, who does all the shopping, compares our shopping bills from 2 years ago to what they are now, and they're double. How is that?
Wow.
Really?
No, I don't keep track of the price. I get groceries delivered from Save On Foods right up and onto the counter at my kitchens, but I never keep track of the prices. It's just not my way. But your wife's reading on it would be valuable.
And she's very meticulous with the budget. She watches every penny. That used to be a round copper disc that was worth 1 cent.
Yeah.
Pennies have been already, I can't say they're banned in Canada. You can still use a penny to buy something, but the government no longer produces them because it costs much more than 1 cent to make a cent.
I got in a little pouch of old coins I've had for a long time. There's a British penny from about 1859, and I think it's worth almost $1,000.
From
the last time I looked.
Yes. Now, in Canada, what we complain about most for food prices is the price of cheese caused by marketing boards.
Yep.
And that's why I think cheese is the most bought thing by Canadians to go across the border and come back, because it's so much more affordable in the U.S.
Well, this is what's bugging Trump.
Yeah.
You got 250% tariffs on dairy products, and, of course, which province generates the most dairy products? Quebec. So anyways, this is one of the concerns that Trump has, is to get rid of things like that. And we should just make it open. But then you've got a whole lot of protected dairy farmers in Quebec.
10,000.
Yeah. And then now here's the other one, is that Quebec gets about $13 billion a year. They call it equalization payments. Now, that $13 billion comes out of the oil and gas in Alberta.
And B.C.
And B.C., yeah. And also Saskatchewan. And the money goes to Quebec. Now, here is the point. Albertans and those in Saskatchewan and just practical people anywhere would love to see the pipelines extended east to the eastern seaboard. But guess who blocks it? Quebec. And yet they get their $13 billion a year out of Alberta. I mean, this is insane. Alberta should just say no more transport of things across the provincial border, and that would get their attention quite nicely, I would think.
It would be much cheaper to build a pipeline, because the pipeline stopped basically at Sarnia, Ontario.
Yeah.
So from there to at least deeper water, so we can get tankers to take LNG. That's what Europe really wants from us, is LNG.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago when a delegation from Germany came to Trudeau, who was then Prime Minister, and said, we need liquid natural gas. And Trudeau says, no, it would cause global warming, and that was that. But now they're beginning to move on transporting. And one of the things is that you've got this kooky NDP premier of British Columbia, and he really personally does not want expansion of a pipeline across northern BC, and he doesn't want oil tankers up and down the coast. And there you are, it's stuck. And it's appalling that an individual that would have this much persuasion.
Now, of course, too, BC's former premier, the late John Horgan, spent millions and millions and millions of taxpayer dollars fighting the pipelines from Alberta to BC to ship energy to Asia. And then, right after he retired, he went to work for Teck, which is one of the world's biggest coal companies.
I didn't know where he went after retirement, but there you are.
Yeah. So, do they really believe what they say?
Well, mainly it's an exercise in power. You get a very selfish, driven leader, and they get identified with their programs, and they just, it's a selfish power trip. We'll see what happens. Whereas if it's market forces making the determination, it'll be practical until it's no longer practical, I guess, yeah.
Friend of the show, Stuart Muir from ResourceWorks, says each LNG tanker carries at least $100 million worth of product. I think the province would make a little bit of money from that.
Oh, yeah, they would. And I didn't know a cargo of LNG was that much money. $100 million, that's something.
Because in Asia, natural gas is worth a whole lot more than it is here, where you just pump it out locally.
Yeah, well, I saw something about 3 cents locally and 12 cents in Asia.
I think it's $12.
Well,
it depends on the unit you're using, yes. Yeah. Meter or cubic foot.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll take a look at more headlines with Bob right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headline from Zero Hedge: shocking record explosion in student loan delinquencies marks the start of the next debt crisis.
Yeah, I'd say it's part of getting to the next debt crisis. And also, I think President Trump is going to get tough on the agencies that grant student loans, and they're going to start collecting, which would really be something. So, yeah.
Well, is that a canary in the coal mine situation, where if young workers can't pay their loans, then who's the next person? Minimum wage workers and so on.
Mm-hmm. It's all part of the mess.
Some people have commented that credit card companies shouldn't be allowed to charge 29-30%, like Walmart does, for their credit cards. The rate should be much lower, considering what the central bank loaning rates are. Is it fair for credit companies to charge that much money?
It's what the market will bear. They do it.
So,
and it's not up to some arbitrary agency to decide which is fair and which is not fair. That, again, is more intrusion in the system.
Is it true that people who take out credit cards like that are high credit risks?
Oh, I don't know, Jim. No, it depends on the individual. And some individuals are no risk. Some individuals are huge risk.
Mm-hmm. From Breitbart, Breitbart Business Digest says, why Trump won the trade war before the first shot was fired.
Yeah. Yeah, he is quite the gamer. And is getting things sorted out. I like his drive towards tariffs. In the main, in the United States, before the evils of income tax in First World War, governments obtained their revenues from taxing things, specifically things that were imported. And so what you have here is he's going to try and trim government expenses and get rid of and bring it all down to raising money where needed through tariffs. And then that then allows him to eliminate the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, because they won't have the evil of taxing money before you get it. And if it gets through in the States, you can be assured that the clamor in Canada would also get rid of income taxes. And as I say, if you read back at the time when income taxes were being introduced, it was considered as a moral evil. And then, of course, they only started with a small percentage, maybe 2% on the high income people, but it was the start of the rot. So there's good things ahead for one aspect of Trump's tariffs, and that's the getting government funded not through income tax.
I believe the Fraser Institute in Vancouver did a study recently that found that Canadians spend 42% of their money on taxes, or 48. It's some incredible number where almost half of their income goes to taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's income or tax.
Federal, provincial.
Municipal,
yeah.
And of course, the guys who are in each level of government tax you at a rate ignoring what other levels of government are taking out of your pocket.
Yeah, and then also the higher ones up in government have the audacity to take out a membership in the finer clubs, like downtown Vancouver, the Vancouver Club, and you've got high end bureaucrats being members of what is essentially a businessman investors club.
Should government officials make more money than the premier of a province or the prime minister?
No.
But they do.
Yeah, I guess they do, yeah.
Just for example, Jerry Dubrovny, who's the chair of the Greater Vancouver District, gets $700,000. The prime minister makes $400,000.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's absurd. No,
yeah.
No. Much greater responsibility at the prime minister's level.
You would think.
Yeah.
Depending on who the prime minister is.
But well, we don't have a prime minister now. Mark Carnage, somebody wrote. And he is just your ultimate bureaucrat. And he's a greenie. He wants to have everything shut down and saving the planet from CO2. Good grief. No, he's a green monster and doesn't understand the physics of atmospheric carbon dioxide and stuff like that.
Well, naturally the Earth gets warmer sometimes. Sometimes it gets colder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
well, about 500 million years ago, they called it the planet ice. It may not have been totally hard ice. Let's call it a slush ball. And how many critters were living under the slush? Not that many.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, good to be with you, Jim, and let's look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.